Last week, we started a series of five specific points kind of on how to confront practically. We had visited how to confront missionally first. So if you weren't here last week, like missional confrontation, what did we mean by that? You might kind of remember why we called it missional specifically. And there's not a specific right answer. You probably will hit on it if you were here. So anybody remember why we called it missional? Okay, then why is confrontation missional? Maybe we can start there. Why would that be considered missional? Because it certainly doesn't, it sounds like a distraction. It sounds like a detour. No, you're on your mission and then you have to deal with this thing. And that's not really what we're talking about. Confrontation goes along with the Christian life. It's not a detour. It's something that you're naturally going to experience in your life. And we need to know how to deal with it biblically. And I shouldn't have even said deal with it. We need to learn how to address it biblically for the purpose of caring for the other person. So if you really are on God's mission, you're not just trying to insult somebody by confronting them, okay? But that's really hard because that's what I want to do naturally. Like when someone hurts me or there's a mutual disagreement, you just want to win. I just want to win. I'm so competitive. I hate losing. And it shows up in a lot of different, it shows up on the road when I'm driving, okay? Someone's got a better engine, I give myself an excuse, but if they don't, man, and I don't make the right move to go around that slow person, I'm so ticked at myself because I just want to beat people, like as in win against them. It happens on the soccer field when you get into your like 30s and you just haven't been playing soccer a lot and you used to, like your mind knows what your body used to do and like be capable of doing at a specific speed. And then you have to learn to slow your mind down, otherwise you're gonna look like a moron because you can't do the same things that you used to. I do want to get better, by the way. So if you're on that soccer team, we're gonna thanks Josh. Josh is my coach. So I've been getting better. Just slowly but surely. Yeah, great. Thank you. Anyway, we want to be on mission. I feel like I just lost my mission of this entire conversation. So it's a missional confrontation. This is going to happen. It's a natural consequence of who we are. So we want to use these opportunities to glorify God. And we're going to be talking more about that today as well. So last week, we started with the first point. We started with the first point of practical confrontation, how to confront practically. Number one was just consideration. If you weren't here, I'll just revisit those questions really quickly. And the way we did it last week was I challenged people to think about a specific sin that was going on in their life, and not even just a conflict, but something that you did recently or thought recently or acted upon recently that was a clear sin in your mind, and we asked some questions about that, some diagnostic questions, okay? And the first one was, what was going on? In other words, what were the circumstances surrounding that? Second one was, what were you thinking and feeling as it was going on? In other words, how were you processing the situation? Were you personally hurt? Were you angry? Were you disappointed? What were you initially inclined to do? And then what did you actually do in response? What about the way you handle things was put on display? Because we all handle things a little bit differently. So what about you was put on display the last time you had a specific either conflict with someone else or just a sin towards God? Were you vindictive towards someone? Were you angry at God? What selfish actions came out? Fourthly, why did you do it? And that was the question that we asked, what did you want? Because every time we do something that's sinful, we're wanting something. Parents, have you ever asked your kids that question, what did you want, and just try to get at the heart of the matter? Anybody try that? I'm not a parent, but I think it might work, so we'll see. At some age, it probably doesn't. But it does work in counseling. We used to work at a camp, a lot of us together, and that's a very good question because it reveals what the idols of the heart actually are. Probably won't work as well with a two-year-old. So lastly, what was the result? What came about? So we were trying to counsel ourselves last week with just considering the circumstances. Because if you just jump to conclusions about a conflict on either side of it, you're going to be messing up. Now, that was put off number one. So just considering what you did, what happened, that's put off number one. So, I actually had them here. Look at that. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I put them there. Now I remember. So those were the questions right there. And if you need the notes for that, I can email them to you from last week. Put off number two is confession. It has to do with what does God want the person to admit and confess, of course. So again, I'm borrowing this a little bit from a book called Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands, which is very good on this specific topic. It's not all about conflict resolution, but toward the end it is. So what does God want the person to admit and confess? You see how that sounds more missional than just getting someone to admit wrong to you? Okay, how do you picture confession? Like in your mind, are you like a mental picture kind of person? Because I typically am. Like, how do you picture what confession looks like? Here's your first option, number one. That's tender, right? They're probably grieving about something because they're wearing black, but I was just putting a confession in there. Let's just pretend like they just made up about something, right? You know, I'm so sorry for abandoning you, my daughter, for 15 years. I don't know. I'm just making something up right now. But is that what you think of when you think of confession? You know, you're just making amends. And that's not a bad picture, so I'm not setting you up for something like that's wrong. I think that's a good sign of what confession can look like. But I want to bring out the thrust of what I've been learning, and I want to direct the attention elsewhere, just slightly elsewhere, that this might be a better picture of what Christian confession looks like. Because who's the focus in this picture? Is it really each other? Probably, a little bit. But who's the main focus in this picture? It's the Lord, okay? Because it's a bigger deal when it's about your standing in a relationship before God. That orients things so well. That allows you to not be a jerk, for one, to the other person, because you know there's something that's greater at stake. It's the glory of God in this circumstance. And so maybe confession ought to look a little bit more like this. I was trying to find two people worshiping as well, because here's the point I'm getting at. True confession flows out of worship and results in a deeper, fuller worship of God. Okay? True confession flows out of an oriented heart of worship towards God. If God is your primary objective, if knowing him is your primary objective, if being changed by him is your primary objective, then when you get offended by other people, it doesn't matter as much, and it puts it in its right spot. But we tend to focus on the circumstance itself, and that's all there is to it. There's nothing outside of that circumstance. It's just the thing. It's just that I'm hurt, and I can't think outside of that until we're convinced biblically that, no, there's much more at stake than even your relationship with the other person. There's certainly much more at stake than just your pride, okay? What's at stake is the glory of God. And so that's why on Sunday mornings, when you come to worship, if you have an ought against somebody else, you ought to take care of that right away. Who wants to go through a worship service and you know that there's someone in the same room as you that you like did something against, or you know they despise you and you know there's something wrong there? How are you supposed to not only just focus but also truly worship if you're holding on to something like that? Now that can apply to the offender and the offended, and it especially applies to a local church. Okay, so maybe there are some relationships outside of this church you need to get right, and you can't do it right as the service starts. Maybe you can make a phone call, maybe you can't. But man, inside here, we ought to protect ourselves. Do you really want that other person not to be able to worship too? Like, what if they're the ones, they're the bad guy in the situation, and like you really want to, they're not going to be worshiping God because I didn't forgive them yet. No, we don't want to be like that. There's a recognition, a mutual recognition in this picture that I think is taking place. If these guys had just confessed sin to one another and praying, I'm assuming they're both probably confessing some measure of their own fault in it, because that's usually what happens with me. It's not just a 100%, 0%. It's usually like a 60-40. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more in just a second. No, I'm going to go back to that picture. Here's what I wanted to say. So first of all, take care how you confess, okay? Number one, offended, don't confess for the other person, okay? Don't confess for the other person. And here's three things that might look like, okay? Confessing for the other person, first of all, might look like harboring bitterness against people is actually confessing their sin to myself. Have you ever confessed someone's sin to yourself over and over again? You're just talking to yourself about the circumstance. So you're taking their sin and you're confessing it to yourself. You can't really do that for them. Sorry, that's their job. Anger is akin to confessing their sin to God. You're having this argument with God. You're dissatisfied that he hasn't done something and placing yourself in his position as judge. Something else is confessing their sin to someone else. What is that? That's gossip, okay? Confessing their sin to someone else is gossip, okay? So take care how you confess. Each of these can exist, it says, in subtle forms in our hearts, subverting the ministry God wants to do through us, okay? You can't confess for them. And then the offended, don't fake confess. I think that's a pretty easy one. But I want to dig into that a little bit. Because there's a difference between, you ever hear yourself and when you confess? Start paying attention to yourself when you think you're confessing and see if you really are, because you might not be. I got this by way of Jonathan Albright, by way of a guy named Les Olala, who was a real big help to some of us in a Christian camp we used to work at. And the idea that there's a difference between I'm sorry I was blah, 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 and I'm sorry that I am, fill in the blank. Does that make sense a little bit? Because you can almost treat, okay, you fly off the handle because they were messing with your thing, okay? And you had your thing. You didn't want anybody to touch the thing that you love so much, okay? Whatever that thing is, and it could be your own self-respect. Whatever it is, okay? It got interrupted. Your idols were revealed. And you go to the person and say, I'm sorry, I was selfish. Now, that's true, right? You were. Okay, especially in that moment. But isn't it more even effective and even more real to say, I'm sorry that I am selfish? Because do you think that our lives are just these little punctiliar events that really don't betray who we actually are? They're just, how do we say it sometimes? How do people fake confess that way? We'll say, I didn't mean that, when sometimes you actually did. Probably more often than not. You need to really ask yourself, didn't you mean that though? Like, didn't you mean exactly that? And you find some sort of, like, way that they took it that you didn't exactly mean it in exactly that way, but you were still being kind of a jerk, okay? So there is a difference between, definitely, I didn't mean to blah, blah, blah. Now, you could have, like, thrown your hand back and slapped somebody in the face, right? You didn't mean to do that necessarily, okay? So things happen. But I'm talking about those things we actually did mean to do, okay? So there's a difference between I didn't mean and I was, and there's an even more subtle difference between I was and I am. What if you actually went to that person and you said, I'm sorry that I am like this, okay? Because we are, and until you start owning that, like, this is something that's actually who I am, we don't go to God that way, I hope. God, I didn't mean to do that. God, I'm sorry that I'm selfish. I am, and I don't. If you don't intervene, I don't know what's going to happen because I can't take care of this. I've lived long enough to know that I can't just do this on my own. God, I'm sorry that I'm envious. You ever been like racked with envy before, and you don't even know how to get out of it? I'm sorry that I am this way. So changing our language to be more honest with who we truly are, instead of guarding yourself, because we hedge so much with our language. It's automatic that you guys, when you're in a conflict with someone, just like me, you hedge, you want it to be on your own terms, and you want yourself to still sound good more often than not, right? So we have to be a little bit more brutally honest with who we truly are. Knowing that what came out of you wasn't just an episode, but an accurate reflection of who you are. Now, and then as we call others to confess, we need to confess the sins that are in our own hearts at the same time. So those are kind of the two put-off elements, okay? We had consideration of the circumstance, of the conflict, where, especially if you're the one who's been offended, you want to have the full picture, okay? And then the second step of that is confession on that other person's part, okay? The third step is commitment. It's put on, number one. So we had two put-offs, now we're getting into the put-on section, okay? To what new ways of living is God calling this person? We talked about it a little bit last week, but usually when Paul is giving some sort of directive, and we mentioned it, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but Ephesians 4, when he was saying, let him that stole steal no more. Okay, he could have left it that way. Don't steal, okay? That's kind of how the Ten Commandments go about it, right? Stop, okay? And there's definitely an element to that. But he doesn't just stop there. He says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him repay. And then he gives even a heart motivation, okay? Let all bitterness and wrath and anger, let all these things be put off from you with all malice. And talks about not grieving the Holy Spirit. So Paul, in his typical patterns, gives you a put off, he gives you a put on, but then he gives you a motivation on why to do that. And if you're really paying attention, he gives you the means with which to do that. And they might be the same thing. Sometimes the motivation and the means are the exact same thing, okay? Because you can broaden the whole thing out. That God's grace, okay, is not just our motivation for getting things right with other people, but it's also the means by which we do it. Does that make sense? Okay? God's grace not only motivates us because we've been shown so much love, more than we could ever show another human being, that's a motivating factor, but it's also what carries us. For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. So God's grace teaches us, it pushes us. It doesn't just motivate us, it's also the means by which we can do these things, okay? So to what new ways of living is God calling this person? Now, we can get a confession out of somebody, but you know that even when you've admitted wrong and it's a specific pattern in your life, that doesn't eradicate the pattern. It's the start of eradicating the pattern, but there needs to be a putting on of some kind of spiritual living, some sort of fruit of the Spirit in your life in order to combat that, because something's got to take its place, okay? So those areas in which you struggle, those areas that people bring up to you in your own life when they confront you about specific things that you did or you said or you thought, what are you going to replace it with? So let's pretend like you're the bad guy right now, okay? Okay, so what is bitterness replaced with? Yeah, okay, love. What else? Endurance? Yeah. What does that mean? Like, kind of, what are you in your mind? What are you thinking? A lot of times, because you've held. Can you say that? Because I want to repeat it for the recording. That was really good. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Endurance, meaning long suffering, being willing to endure. Okay, so instead of burying that bitterness in your own heart, you endure with the other person. Do we see long suffering in, I don't think we see that word in modern translations as much, but if you're familiar with older ones, that's what that means. Like that's a really good way of even thinking about that. So super helpful. Great. What else? Anything else as far as bitterness goes? The opposite, kind of the putting on? Yeah. 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 Bitterness is bondage. He said freedom, by the way, because not everybody who was going to be listening to that heard that. So very good. What about, I know anger is pretty close to bitterness, but what would be the put on aspect of anger? What's the put on aspect of anger? Think. Any suggestions? As the head scratch always fakes me out. Yes, Michelle. Thankfulness? Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Thankfulness. Good. Patience. Thank you. She made a face like she was guilty of saying something. That's funny. What would be the opposite of envy? Okay. See, that's a pretty easy one, I think. What's the opposite of envying someone? Contentment. Okay, good. I wasn't even thinking of that, so good. Very good. What else would be the opposite of envy? Now I lost what I was going to say. Sorry? Generosity. Yeah, very good. Those are all really good things. So, yeah? Yeah. I think that's, yes. Yes, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah. Rejoicing. Rejoicing with the other person rather than envying. That's hard for me to do. So as we're doing all these things, we want to think about what putting on looks like. So to what new ways of living is God calling you? Okay. In what new ways is God calling you to love and serve others? But even then, you can probably get a commitment out of somebody. And this is what we talked about right at the end of last week. I'm good at commitments. I'm great at saying an intent of something that I want to change. I'm really bad at actually doing that, okay? So when you're calling somebody to a specific commitment, okay, you're also calling them to change. So that's put on number two. That's the last segment we're going to be dealing with today, okay? You, as an advocate for this person, are not just trying to change them for your own ends, because you're advocating for them toward a relationship with God, toward a better relationship with Him. So in all of this, as you're examining offense and considering the surrounding factors, as you're calling someone to confession, as you're calling them to commitment, that we are automatically hardwired to feel like if someone's calling me to do all these things, that they're being selfish. So you really have to go into it with the right motivation when you're actually calling someone to change. I love you, and I don't want to see you enslaved to this anymore. And you might be calling them to something that doesn't really immediately even impact you, but it's just something you see in someone's life. And so you're like, you know what? I'm going to advocate for that person. I'm going to come alongside this person. I'm going to talk to them. I would want them to do the same thing to me. I would want them to come alongside me and talk about anything that they think is hindering my walk with God. So confession turns into commitment, turns into change. How should these new commitments be applied to daily living? And I got to say, I think that the type of church that we're in, we run the risk of really missing this last point, because I think we do a really good job of getting our theology and the way to think correct, okay? But it's really hard for us to actually put action to these things. And we think that we're done when we've been like, when we know the right answers, instead of actually applying those answers to our lives. I've grown up enough in a type of church that takes the Bible very seriously to know this could be the weakness that we really struggle with, okay? Well, bless God, we take the Bible seriously, and I know the answer to A, B, and C, but I don't do anything about it. And I don't have to look any further than my own life to see there's this massive divide between what I say I believe and how it works out in my life, right? So we especially need to be on guard on this. How does it actually look? How can you apply this new almost motivation of commitment to specific instances in your life? How can you now serve? And so that's why I did this little blank thing that we can kind of fill in, okay? So are you seeing those blanks? I gave it to you twice. One, to see what we're going for, and then two, to fill it in. So change, not personal insight or commitment, is the goal of confrontation. So just having insight on an issue is not the goal of confrontation, it's change. So here's my theory, here's my suggestion to you today. And we'll actually be done after this, so we'll have a little bit more of a break than normal. We'll see. Okay. Where there was once blank, and in that you have the specific sin. Due to blank, a specific heart motivation, this is almost like a prayer, may there now be blank with a specific fruit because of a godly motivation, and or, you don't always have to do both of these because they could be the same thing, because of godly motivation and godly means. Do you guys at least see where I'm going with this? It's kind of, okay. So, find the sin, okay? And this is what we're actually looking for. Where there was once this sin, we want to, and this sin really was showing that my heart is geared this way. There was this heart motivation. There was something that I wanted that I wasn't getting, and so I'm filling that in the blank. May there now be this spiritual fruit, okay? Whether it's love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, or others, because we could add to that, okay? Because of, we want this fruit to have the motivation of a godly motivation, something that God has given us, granted us in Christ, and a godly means, okay? So we get to experiment with this just a little bit, okay? So I want you to kind of pair off or trio off for maybe the next, 3 minutes, I guess. I'll set a little timer on my watch. And find something in particular that affects your life, okay? So this is not the time that you find a sin that someone's committed against you, okay? This is the time that you think about, I really struggle with this specific area, okay? So where there was this, and then you maybe even have that person help you. What was your motivation? What do you think your heart motivation was with that sin? Where there was this due to this motivation, may there now be this fruit because of this godly motivation. And we'll be able to kind of share these as like a prayer and testimony to close this time out.